You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Dear Multi-Hyphenate. It is your host, Michael Kushner. I am so excited for this episode. I have an amazing guest, but before we get to him, I'm going to just plug my... I'm calling it a talk show. You know, I like to say it's the new Rosie O'Donnell show, just because, you know, I have high expectations for myself. But I have a new show with the Broadway Podcast Network. It's where you get to see my gorgeous face, my Russian Jewish bone structure. It's called My Broadway Memory with my co-host Brian Sedita. Basically, what we do is we pull a playbill from our collections and we talk about those memories associated. Just because Broadway is shut down right now doesn't mean that the memories have to be. So we pull a playbill from our collection, talk about what it was like going to see that show that day, any understudies, what the headshots were like, what were the ads in the playbill, how we got our tickets, was a surprise. I mean, there's so many stories. But what's amazing is that we have guests come on. We've had Alice Ripley, Jen Damiano. We've had Joan Marcus and Brittany Johnson. And we've had Di Rossioli and Jackie Burns. I mean, the list goes on and on, and our guests are amazing, and you will love the show. And you could be a part of it as well by posting a video of you going through your playbills and picking one at random and telling that story and posting it on Instagram with the hashtag #MyBroadwayMemory and tag us, and we'll take that video and put it on air. It's so much fun, and I can't wait to see you every Thursday live, 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time at bpn.fm/MyBroadwayMemoryLive. It's a gas. And speaking of a gas, I know my next guest is an absolute gas. I mean, you have seen him. God, I've seen him everywhere. You've seen him in Something Rotten. He was Tony nominee. He was nominated for a Tony for Something Rotten. Big Fish, Nice Work If You Can Get It, The Addams Family, Spamalot. He had a Tony nom for The Producers, which I can't wait to ask him about, and Jekyll and Hyde as well. And Aspects of Love was his Broadway debut. I mean, we have the incomparable, the amazing, one of my inspirations, Brad Oscar. Hi.
Hey, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. That was quite an introduction.
Oh, well, thank you. I don't know about you, but like when I'm the guest of things and they have like an introduction for me, I'm kind of like, oh, I did that. Yeah. Oh my God, I did do that. I forgot about that. I should talk about that more often. I don't know if that's how it feels when you hear the things that are listed back to you, but it's,
well, I mean, it's just, you know what? I'm still sometimes amazed and so grateful because, you know, it's what I always dreamt of when I was a kid and blah, blah, blah. So, you know, to be doing what I'm doing and so when I hear all that, I'm like, oh my God, that's my God, I've made a career of this.
And it's quite an amazing career.
Very, very,
and
very lucky.
Yes, it's quite amazing. Yeah. And I've followed you for so many years. One, I'm a huge, and this is, you know, we have a very good mutual friend and that's Jordan Silver. And we're both obsessed with Jekyll and Hyde. So,
which I love.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because I mean, not.
But as we were talking about, you know, these emotional attachments we have to shows and the whole idea of your playbill show, which I love because, you know, my God, I was an avid collector. You know, I have so many playbills. But anyway, shows that are touchstones and our mutual friend Jordan, yeah, was, you know, of that age when he was just starting to really get turned on, you know, to live theater, musical theater, much less that story because he loved all that spooky stuff too. But anyway, my point being, I love the fact that that show means so much to him and how special that is to me, having known this kid since he was born. So, you know, and someone I love so much. And so that's very special to me to have been a part of something, you know, and of course it means it because he would come backstage, he'd come to see the show, he saw it several times, you know, it's what's so special about what we do, yeah.
When I first met him, he was in eighth grade, and I remember the first conversation we were having, and we were comparing the different Jekyll and Hydes. We were, you know, it was, you know, and I was like, who is this eighth grader? And then what happened was he wound up auditioning for my school, Ithaca, and it worked out perfectly that I, you know, if he were to get in, I would be his senior to his freshman. Uh-huh. And he got in and he became my little.
It's fabulous.
I know. It's amazing. Yeah, that's the theater. It's full circle. It's about relationship and, you know.
Yeah.
But it's now speaking of relationship, the, you know, I have such an amazing memory when I was at the St. James Theater in 2005. I saw you do The Producers.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. it was you, Hunter mm-hmm. Foster,
mm-hmm.
Jonathan Freeman, Brooks.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. Yeah.
Angie. I mean, yeah. What a cast.
Yeah. No, there were some great, you know, the show was such an extraordinary ride for me because I did it so much in so many different places and with so many different people. But yeah, you talk about that grouping of people at that point in the Broadway run, which was actually the end of my Broadway run with Producers. After I left later in 2005, I left to go do a show in DC where I met my husband, which is crazy, Beshert. But anyway, that was the end of my, yeah. So yes.
I love that you just said Beshert.
Yeah, and our dog's name is Beshert. We call him Baz for short, because Cher is too gay. So we call him Baz. But yeah, my husband is a better Jew than I am sometimes, and he's not Jewish. But anyway.
I wish you could see my face. My jaw is absolutely dropped. It's amazing, because I think I mentioned Beshert in every single episode. Well, you know what I mean? Because I'm a huge
word. It's a great word.
It's a great word. It sounds like what it means. That's what an onomatopoeia is, right?
Although, you know, I didn't know until our wedding vows that Beshert also meant soulmate, that it could be a noun in that way. I always thought it meant just meant to be, serendipitous, but someone can be your Beshert, which I did not know until literally he said it to me during our wedding vows in front of all of our guests, and of course I was a mess. Because, you know, he loved the Yiddish words that he learned when we started seeing each other. Anyway, are we getting off topic here?
No, that's what this podcast is about.
Oh, good. That's wonderful. See, we can just, exactly. This isn't like my 4 minutes on New York One or something.
No, it's not. This is your 30 minutes on a podcast that just talks and talks. It's also hosted by a Jewish boy. So it's exactly. Like, you know, so, there are so many windows open that never get closed.
Exactly. No, I love it. Please. So yeah, but yeah, that force, you know, Hunter and Brooks and Jonathan Freeman. I mean, again, people who are just at the top of their game when it was, you know, when it comes to certainly this style, this kind of comedy, and, you know, how lucky I was. And then to have worked with Brooks again in Rotten, you know, because I just, I admire Brooks so much. Because Brooks as a person, he's so crazy and so talented and so funny and just, but the heart, Brooks's heart and Brooks's love of what we do and musical theater in general. And, you know, the passion that all of us musical theater kids still carry and burn bright, and it informs what we do. And it's why Brooks is so good at what he does. Why so many of these people we talk about, because that love and that passion that exceeds and has nothing to do with necessarily ability or style or this or that. It's a thing. And so to be on stage with those guys every night doing that show. And again, when you have material like that, you don't have to work to make it work, baby. You just go out there.
No, honey, you don't.
You know, you play it, and it just, boy, it was, it was a very, very special experience. And it always, you know, nothing makes me happier than hearing, you know, people say that was one of my first experiences, or that's something that always stuck with me, or blah, blah, blah. You know, especially when that first year when I was just the understudy, when I was playing Franz, and not just the understudy, but I was playing Franz, and Nathan would be out, and I would go on. And that first year was crazy. People were dying to see that show and to see Nathan and Matthew in that show, understandably so. It was, you know, that was a wild and remarkable opportunity in that respect. But yeah, it was, it's great to when people say to me, you know, that was my first Broadway show or whatever, you really, you know, and they remember me specifically because I grew up seeing those shows. And whenever I would see an understudy, you know, and I knew that I wasn't seeing the star, I knew that understudy's name for the rest of my life. I can still tell you. Yes. I saw, you know, John Hamill went on for Robert Klein and you know, and Judy Kay went on for Madeline.
Yeah.
There I saw it like the week after Madeline left or something. And so, Judy Kay has been an icon of mine. And then to work with her in these past years, to get to work with her a couple times, you know, pinch me.
Did you read the biography that came out of Madeline in like 2015?
No, I did not.
Read it. It's like, it's really dense. It's like 350 pages and it's like super dense. It's like you're reading Les Mis or something, but it really does key you in to her life and like why mm-hmm. she was so special and like, you know, her, I had a really, you know, really interesting, introduction to that, book because I was with Randy Skinner at an event and he was like, how are you doing? I'd been in for him a few times and I was like, yeah, I'm okay. I just, you know, I was, you know, 2 years into the city. I was young mm-hmm. and unafraid like Fantine. And so, I just was like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm figuring out what I want. And he was like, well, what do you want? Whose career do you want? And I was like, I want like a combination of Mel Brooks and Madeleine Kahn's career. And he was like, well, have you done your research and have you read the book that just came mm-hmm. out? And I was like, no. And, you know, mm-hmm. I put my tail between my legs and I ordered it off of Amazon and it was an amazing read because there, I learned so many things like about the upstairs and the downstairs. And now that made sense when Lily Tomlin gave Madeleine Kahn the, you know, presented her Tony for Sisters mm-hmm. Rosenzweig, you know, she goes, and this is going out to my friend who got me my first job at the, mm-hmm. The upstairs of the downstairs, Madeleine Kahn. And then when I watched that, I was like, oh, that's okay. I understand what right. all that means and the weight that that has.
Right.
So right. it's quite an, right. I love that you have that experience because I would die. Right. I would die to go back in time and see, I know you said Judy Kay, but I would love to see Madeleine right. do anything, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Well, of course she was taken. And I did see her in Sisters mm-hmm. Rosenzweig and, yeah. And she was terrific and so special. I was watching High Anxiety yesterday on TV.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, I was talking to my Diego and I was saying, it's not, she's just funny because of just, she just lives there. She takes lines that are not funny. The lines aren't funny. The words by themselves are not funny, but she puts it together and behind it is whatever, you know, usually manic, you sometimes just a little on the, you know, some of her best work always, What's Up, Doc? Yeah. She's extraordinary. Yeah. What's Up, Doc? Oh my God. That movie is extraordinary. Fantastic. A lot of people are very good in that movie and it's funny as all, but yeah, but she was, you know, look, she was, you know, there are people who are just special. They're unique. They are otherworldly in that way, in a great way. And yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She was known after she would do something and people would be laughing. She was known to go, why are they laughing?
Yeah.
Which right. breaks my heart, you know?
Yeah, well, right. sure. I mean, yes, I guess. I mean, yes, you have to. I sometimes think, you know, geniuses, people who are maybe that, that they, yeah, they live in a slightly different world or a slightly different place where, you know, so we're all thinking, you're just brilliant. That's hilarious. You're making, you know, and she's like, why are they laughing? You know, there is yeah. a slight disconnect there. But
yes,
fascinating nonetheless. And, you know, I mean, like all the great divas maybe who were hard to work with, or why are they such monsters? These people we hear about, why was Jerome Robbins such a monster supposedly, you know, well, we probably wouldn't have had the output, you know, he would not have given us what he gave us had he been right. the nicest guy in the room. Maybe I don't know. It's no excuse for being an asshole or whatever, but you know what I'm saying? I think sometimes really talented people, excuse me, are eccentric. In different ways, whatever that means, you know? And yeah, I wish I were a little crazier.
I know, right? Me too. Well, I am. So, well, you know, it's interesting. Communication, it's very interesting. My, you know, I have a Goyim boyfriend and he, you know, he yells at me sometimes because some of the things that I'm saying, he's like, don't yell at me, don't yell at me. And I'm like, I'm not yelling at you. You know, but it's because I think in the Jewish religion and Jewish culture, mm-hmm. we get very passionate.
Yeah.
And sometimes it can be, no, I don't want this. Put it over there. I said on the table. I'm not mad at you. Stop it. You know?
Right. Yes.
And so I refuse to believe that Jerry Robbins is, was a mean guy. I'm just going to say he was passionate. But a Beshert moment, right, would be like this. Like I saw you do The Producers and, you know, you've always been one of my favorite performers and inspirations. And that night, you know, Jonathan Freeman, I've loved Jonathan Freeman since I was like 3 years old, you know, Jafar, mm-hmm. it doesn't get any better than that. Sure. I mean, if you really listen to Jafar, the voice of like his voice is Jafar. The choices mm-hmm. that he makes are mm-hmm. so like otherworldly. They're yeah. so cool. And yeah. me, who just loves shit yeah. like that,
yeah.
was so drawn to that. I was so drawn to that voice, to that, you know, grandeur, and yeah. seeing them, him do the, you know, Roger Debris. So I stage doored it because I was, you know, 14. And I stage doored it, and I was like, I love you a lot. And I guess I was very sincere, because he goes, you know, what's your address? And I wrote on this pink Post-it note, my address. And 2 weeks later, a giant mm-hmm. Jafar mm-hmm. care package showed up at my door in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Well, for what it's worth, my friend, we got the same care package. I worship Jonathan. I worship Jafar. I'm a big Disney Villains fan. And, but yeah, but again, that says everything you need to know, you know, about Jonathan, as far as that generosity and spirit and, you know, making a connection, obviously with a fan, which, you know, could be dodgy, right? People don't often reach out right. like that, because it's not dodgy, but you know what I mean? It's just, it takes work. It's extra, whatever. But I love to hear yeah. that. I love to hear yeah. that. And yeah. Oh, and I have. Oh, yeah. He gave me a print or whatever that he signed, you know, a Jafar thing, because I just, you know, I was watching it just a couple of weeks ago with my goddaughter. We were all together, quarantined together for about 2 months upstate. And we watched Aladdin again, and I hadn't seen it in years. So yeah, there I am watching it, you know, again a year, and just listening to, and it's delicious. He's, you know, he's just everything, right? Like you said, the phraseology, the choice of, you know, to voice an animated character, as we know, is tricky enough in its own right or whatever. But mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. It's fabulous. And I was a huge fan of Jonathan. And that's why when I found out yeah. that he was coming into the show, I was like a kid. I mean, literally like a kid, you know, especially because, yeah. oh my God, it's Jafar. And then the fact that he actually got to do it live on stage, and still will, God willing, when they come back.
I know.
Yeah. Really cool.
Well, you know, one of my favorite moments that talking about the musicality that he has in that voice, it's like yeah. one of my favorite moments that I love to talk about is the choice he makes when he goes, when he's in disguise, at the Cave of Wonders, and he's holding Aladdin as he's falling, and he goes, you know, and now your reward, and then goes down and goes, your eternal reward. And it's just so brilliant. It's this, you know, he uses
I thought he was English. I saw the first time I remember seeing Jonathan on stage was in that She Loves Me revival that he got a Tony right. nomination for
yeah.
In the mid early 90s, I think. Right.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah. And he's the waiter. And of course, he's hilarious and brilliant and doing the whole thing. And I'm like, my God, who is this English guy I've never seen before? Or at least at that point, I didn't really know who Jonathan was. Anyway, come to find out years later, of course, he's not English at all, blah, blah, blah.
From Ohio.
But yeah. But that voice, come on, that's a gift from God. And then, which is why his Jonathan Debris, his Roger Debris, see, there you go. There's a Freudian yeah. slip. His Roger Debris was so delicious because you had, again, those lines coming out of that mouth with that turn of phrase, that sense of humor. So, no, he was, yeah. Oh, God. Yeah.
It was amazing. It's funny that we're talking about this today because the South Florida Cappy Awards, the Tonys for high school mm-hmm. kids down in Florida yeah. is tonight. And I'm presenting for Best Comic Actor in a Musical, which is what I won for my performance of Roger Debris in The Producers my senior year.
I love it.
That's and you better believe that I did my best because, you know, at high school, I was so impressionable. Sure. I did my best Jonathan Freeman as Roger Debris in that production.
That's fabulous. That's fabulous.
So, okay. So I feel I just have so many questions for you now. When, it's so funny. I was like doing my research just to make sure I didn't miss anything about you. And, your Broadway debut was Aspects of Love.
Yes.
How did that happen? Where did you come from? What's that story? Because it seems like it just shot out of nowhere. Like all of a sudden, bam, you're on Broadway.
Bam, I'm on Broadway. I mean, sort of. I graduated from Boston University in 86 and I moved to the city and I started waiting tables. Very traditional. Started waiting tables at a restaurant called Charlie's on 45th Street, yes. which was exactly the Joe Allen's total layout flipped. It was like Joe Allen's little brother, although the restaurants were not associated with each other at all. But it was there next to Barrymore's and Pulio's, an old stretch of 45th Street. And anyone who's listening to this now is of a certain age will go, oh, Charlie's, Barrymore's, oh, McHale's. Anyway.
My mother.
So I waited tables. Of course, your mother. So I was waiting tables and auditioning, you know, literally doing the thing. And I did get my first equity gig. I was able to buy into equity because I was a member of AFTRA and SAG. I had done TV and film work in DC as a kid. So at that point, you were able to buy into equity. And I thought, well, I'm going to do that because then I can start going to these EPAs, to all these open calls and chorus calls and all that stuff. So why not? Right. So I did. And I did. I started going to all these open calls and I literally got Aspects of Love from an open call. I had done my first equity contract the year before in Worcester, Massachusetts, a production of Tomfoolery, the review of Tom Lehrer's music. And I had done that was my first equity contract. But and then I went to the open call. I had a callback. I did a monologue for Trevor Nunn. They wanted a monologue, which was so bizarre because, you know, you rarely do monologues for auditions anymore. Even then, you did them more as like, you know, work and school and whatever.
Right.
So I happened to have this very funny monologue from a play I had done a reading of that I don't know if it ever got produced, but I had done a reading of it and I thought this is very funny and it'll serve me well. And they loved it. And I believe that's what sort of got me the job, I feel like, because, you know, look, being a swing in the original cast of Aspects of covering the ensemble of Aspects of Love was not the biggest challenge in the world. It was more of a, you know, as we know, it's being done now and should be done really as a, what, 8-person show or something.
Right.
But at the time, you know, it needed to be bigger. It needed to follow Phantom. It was his first musical on Broadway after Phantom. Mm-hmm. So I was cast as a swing, covering the, you know, men in the ensemble and Walter Charles, who played the role of Marcel. But from an open call. So crazy. I went from waiting tables on 45th to, you know, walking through that stage door at the Broadhurst. Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
It was amazing.
Now, just because I have a lot of like younger artists that listen to this, like college age and we're making the transition from graduation to the city. Now, were you like, oh, I'm good, I'm golden? Or there was what was your thought process in that moment? Because that's like every person's dream is to like go to an EP. That's why we go to the EPAs, right?
Sure.
Book.
Well, I mean, it was the most exciting thing that had ever happened to me, certainly in many ways, personally, professionally. I mean, my God, I got my first Broadway show. It was everything I ever dreamt of.
Right.
That being said, I don't ever, I'm realistic enough in what show business is and how it works. I think I never felt like, I don't remember at the time thinking, well, now I'm set, because I knew I knew enough people. I waited tables at that restaurant, Charlie's, which was a lot of actors and theater folk. So I knew what it meant to your show was running, your show closed, you're out of work. I knew what that meant. I knew what it meant before I even moved to New York. I mean, you know, we know those things. So anyway, and as a character actor as well, I felt like my better years were probably going to, you know, as I got older or whatever. So no, I can't say I ever felt like, or I ever thought, okay, I'm set now. I've got my first Broadway show. So the rest are just going to come along and I'm going to keep working for the rest of my life. Never.
Yeah.
No. You know, I mean, people, I remember when the producers opened and I got the Tony nomination and people were like, well, you're set now. I mean, you got a Tony nomination. You're set. And I'm like, you don't really understand show business because no, I'm not set. I got a great gig. I got this wonderful recognition. It's helped, my God, what it's done for me just being in the pool. That's all. You're just in the pool. You're in the concentric circles, ideally going toward the bullseye, but you just want to be people to know who you are. So you get some auditions or maybe people offer you a role because they're like, oh, I love Brad or whatever. You know, all that's amazing and gravy. But no, the thought that one ever hasn't made in show business, I think there are only a few of us who can really sit back and say, you know, and what does that mean anyway? Are we talking financially? Are we talking what you think other people think of you? There's so many definitions of that, I guess. So no, I don't think any of that will ever, I don't ever want to be satisfied in that way. I'd love to have a lot more money and have this and that, of course, blah, blah, blah. But you know, the reality is I wanted to be a working actor and I have been so, you know, amazingly blessed to continue to work and not just work, but be a part of some very special projects. And, you know, in an industry and in a town, especially on a, you know, in a 10 to 20 block radius here that I just love so much and grew up just, you know, again, fascinated by and dreaming of. So, you know, that's all good. But no, I think any actor who thinks they're set is probably, you know, set up for disappointment. So you just, you do the best you can. And you know, the one thing I wish I'd learned earlier, I guess, was to just embrace all of who I am and all of what I bring to a role or a choice in an audition or whatever, and not question that, because that's what they want to, because that ultimately is what's going to serve you. You know, there's another guy, you know, right next to me who's got that other thing that they want, maybe that I'll never have, but I've got everything I've got. So, you know, I've tried to, you know, and that's nice because getting, you know, the kind of acknowledgement, if you will, as far as getting roles and doing roles and being able to continue to work enables me to trust that more, even when I'm still totally like, how am I going to do this? I'm going to suck. You know, I try to convince myself, no, just commit to it. They gave you the role, or you got the role or whatever it is, just, you know, whatever. And that's all you can control. So why not give it all you got, you know? And it's easier said than done, believe me, still. But, you know, anyway. All right, time out.
No, that's beautiful. I was like, wow, I'm getting the masterclass that I needed today. Thank you.
Well, you know, I mean, the irony is I think it's all such simple stuff and we do hear it and we are told it and blah, blah, blah. But I think that there's, you know, a lot of stuff that you can only learn from getting older. You can hear it a million times. But you can only learn it from, because when you're at a certain age and you're in a certain peer group, especially in show business, you know, you're concerned about different things that I don't have to worry about right now. So it's easy for me to say, you know, be yourself or whatever. And yourself might be the person who, you know, doesn't want to do this or do that or whatever. But in order for you to get into that or get that gig, maybe you need to conform a little more. So I know it's easy for me to speak in absolutes, but, yes. But yeah, but I, you know, but again, the idea that there's only one you, and so that's all you can bring to the table. So, you know, yes, do the you that's going to maybe fit into that project, because that's the kind of you they need. But still, you know, try to be true to yourself and don't give yourself a hard time when it's not you. It's not, you know, it's not your turn. It's not your thing. It's not you. There's nothing you can do about it. That's out of your control. The only thing you can control, again, is what you throw out there to them.
See, that's the thing. That's why I became a multi-hyphenate, right? That's why I was like, okay, well, you know, it's really interesting, Brad. It's like, I'm a character actor as well, but I just feel like if, you know, just like what you said, you know, if it's you, then it's you.
Right.
You have all the thing, but that's the thing. It's like, I personally wasn't finding the projects that were allowing myself to fully be me, or they weren't writing for me. Like, it's like everything, it's perfect in the breakdown. And then they want like a high D rock tenor. And it's like, okay, well, okay, that's not me. Or, you know, they need, It's just, you know, something throws a wrench in the plans. And it's like, yeah. Well, you know, it made me go back to the drawing board and go, why am I here? Why am I doing this? Is it to just be on stage? No, I love every aspect of the theater. Right. And there are ones that I love more than others. I mean, I will always be an actor and I will always be in search for the things that, you know, suit me and that I suit the playwright's intention and the idea. And they will always be happening. They will come. But I have to figure out things that are going to keep me moving and keep my name right. out there while, you know, that's why, you know, 54 Celebrates Mel Brooks is really important right. to me. And that's what we worked on together. And, right. Obviously was so thrilled that you were there doing, you know, singing Blazing Saddles. It was a show stopping right. moment. It was amazing. Yeah. But, you know, I was very passionate about it. It was, you know, when people ask me what I do, I'm like, I do Mel Brooks. That's like what I do. Mm-hmm, and right. I was like, well, you know what, Michael, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? So I produced that night, came up with that night and right. was like, I'll put myself in a number where I feel like I'm comfortable enough. Like I'm not going to draw the attention away from the intention of the show. And the intention of the show is not to be like, okay, this is a night where I'm going to prove to everyone right. what I know. It's to celebrate right. Mel Brooks.
Exactly.
So I was like, I'll put myself in a number because that's, you know, what I do. And I've been, you know, really saying that, and we're going to celebrate Mel and I'm going to make this night really exciting and amazing. So I was able to put together my multiple proficiencies into this amazing night. I mean, yeah. first of all, we sold out both shows, and then the streaming of it at 54 was the highest attended stream.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was huge. Great. It right. was huge, huge night. So, yeah. you know, I don't think that's the end of that show. You know, it was a really yeah. good, it was a good night. I hope you had fun.
Oh, I did. I had a great time. And again, you know, seeing all those people, and you brought together such great people and you know, that material to hear his material, you know, we take for granted sometimes, you know, just the films, but without the songs. You know, again, right. I watched High Anxiety yesterday, and that number yeah. is fabulous. It's a great song. It's hilarious. And no one ever, you know, does it in that way. You know, we don't have the opportunity, right? Unless you use it as an audition song or something, or you do it in your club act.
Yeah.
That, to put all that material together and celebrate him is wonderful. And, you know, he was so thrilled with it. My God, it was wonderful.
That makes I hope he was thrilled with it. I hope. And
I heard, know, he it's I heard he was. I heard he was. I only heard he was. But yeah.
Did you really?
Yeah, I heard it. Yes. Didn't you? I thought
no.
No.
That's no. I didn't. Did I send that email?
No. Well, I guess not.
It does sound like something I would send, though, as a producer. Yeah, he was thrilled. It was great. It was perfect. Dude. He loves it. We're going to Broadway.
Ah, exactly. You
know, one of my favorite moments of that night was actually before the show started, because Vianne Cox, who I've worked with on a web series, and I'm a huge fan of her and love her, she, you know, was not feeling very well that night, and at soundcheck, was not sure that she could do the number. And right. I very patiently and calmly worked with her to where she felt mm-hmm. comfortable doing it, and it fit the story. And it was like one of those moments where
yeah.
I was like, oh, okay, I'm doing it. I'm here. I didn't get this moment from a casting director. I got this moment because of me.
Right. Sure.
You know,
sure. And yeah,
and that's and
producer because she was, and honestly, I know the recording that we watched the other night was from the second show, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. It was from the second show.
Yeah. And she was hilarious, but I think she was even funnier in the first show. Do you remember the first show?
Yeah. Yeah,
because
it was gold.
Do you remember the first show? No, because
do you remember the first show?
You remember the first because I blacked out after the opening number. Correct? No,
because yeah, I was. It was. I did honestly.
She was a mess. You're right. She was so nervous. And I've known this girl for years and I worship her. I think, again, you talk about, you know, funny and organic comedy, but also a really good actor. Because more importantly, at the end of the day, well, you got to be a good actor. No matter how good a singer you are, how fun, you know, she really is a the whole package. But she was very, very anxious. And it made the first performance, I thought, absolutely hilarious in a much more dangerous, random way. Because I think she knew she'd gotten through it. Now, I don't mean to diss what people saw because it was brilliant, but it was funny because I remember that first performance and it just, she was terrific. But you did good.
So,
you got her through it. And it was, you know, it's the worst thing in the world. Don't you hate that? That's what I hate about what we do, is that you're dependent on your body and your voice. And there are, you know, so many, you know, times when it's just like, oh shit, it's tonight. My voice is just, you know, I'm not there or whatever. You have to call out and all that. I hate that we're so dependent on, you know, the body that way. It's what we do, but oy, yoy, yoy.
Have you had moments like that before where you've just had to?
Oh my God. Like- moments. I've had weeks. I used to, when I was playing Max, both on Broadway, well, both on Broadway and on the tour
and the porta potty players.
Exactly. And in London too. But I don't think I ever got sick in London because I was only in London for 3 months with it, I think. Uh-huh. Yeah. But no, when I was playing Max full time, 8 shows a week, when I would go down, whether it was because I got a cold or I got sick or I just, my body said time out, I was literally off for like a week. I would literally have to, it just wouldn't. You know, my body was just like time out. You have to listen in cases like that. So, yeah, I've always had, you know, you just always have things you have to deal with because, you know, it's life and it's the way we live. And, you know, backstage, it's like a little Petri. It's a gay care center, as I like to call it. It's like a Petri dish, you know, and it's, you know, we're sharing whatever's going around. I hope that the one interesting good thing that may come of this whole thing is maybe we won't get as many colds and shit like that because we'll be more aware of washing our hands and not touching our faces just during cold season. Not even, you know, God forbid, a thing that can kill us.
I know.
But because that's what I hate the most when I'm doing a show, because when I'm in the groove and I'm in the pocket, you know, physically, vocally, you know, I'm good. I'm healthy. I know how to sing. Yeah. I've taken enough lessons.
Yeah, you do.
I've done it long enough. You know, excuse me. I can be very, you know, my body's pretty strong, God bless, when I get into the groove of it, muscle memory and all that. The minute something comes into play, right, physically or vocally especially, there's nothing, you know, sometimes there's nothing you can do.
Has there ever been a moment in your career where you got nervous and you were like, I don't know if I could do that. I don't know if I could do this.
Well, let's put it this way. There were two performances of the producers where I left at intermission. They saw a different Max Bialystock in Act Two. And usually it was the guy they had just seen playing Franz in Act One.
Very funny.
The whole thing happened with me covering Max off in the front, which is crazy because you never have another principal cover a principal usually, but it's all my fault. In this case, sometimes they did. So dear Bill Nolte, excuse me. I know Bill Nolte in Boston, second national tour opened in Boston and we spent the summer in Boston and that wasn't because, this is interesting. That wasn't because I was sick going into the show. Right. I started to just get very short of breath and woozy toward the end of Act One. And I thought I was going to collapse at the top of a long cambiale, which is the final number in Act One.
Right.
But I got through it. I was never in any pain. I was just, and I don't know if it was to this day, because I went to the hospital, I stayed overnight, they did all the tests, I was fine, nothing happened. So I don't know if it was like a panic attack, a stress thing, you know, to this day, I really don't know exactly what happened. And then there was a performance in New York where vocally, I thought I was better. I thought I was ready to come back. I warmed up in the shower. I felt good. But man, and it always happens too, you get on stage, the adrenaline, whatever it is, it's different. I could sing the hell out of the whole show in the shower, but man, I got on stage. And by the end of Act One, I had nothing. I had nothing. And I think that was was that John Tracy Egan who went on for Act Two? I'm trying to remember. But anyway, God bless those boys. But I just had to. What are you going to do? It's live theater.
And that is not an easy role, my friend.
Well, no, I mean, it's exhausting, and it's mostly the talking. It's not even the singing so much.
Right.
You know, it's all the barking and talking, you know, screaming and shouting, and the heightened. Yeah.
To go back to the original question, I didn't necessarily mean when you were feeling ill, but I'm just saying, like, anything in your career, like, I don't, I'm imagining, like, what was going, like, before your, like, the Tony performance for Something Rotten, because, like, when I have to perform on the Tonys, I don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, I mean, but, you know, I've always felt, I mean, look, I love what I do. I'm so grateful that I get to do it. So I feel like in those moments when I'm going to question, I mean, what am I questioning? I've done, you know, that was the Tony. Yes, it was the Tonys.
Yeah.
Yes, it was, you know, all anything, opening night, this, that. The first time I went on for Nathan as Max, the first time coming from behind that, you know, the Schubert doors there on the set, I was like,
yeah.
I worry about how I'm, you know, I can't, I just have to go out and be the star of the High School Musical today or whatever it was that got me through that in that way. But I've never really questioned, you know, you're in the moment, right? And so I think I feel solid enough about what I do and, you know, and that, you know, you have to just sort of forge on through. And so, I mean, yes, it's overwhelming. You know, I'll never forget that moment before, because Brian D'Arcy James and I were behind a big, you know, light board, whatever. I don't know what was in front of us. I'm not sure what the audience was seeing. It was the very top of the show. So whatever it was in front of us. It went up and we started bantering and we did the number, a musical.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, I'll never forget that moment with Brian. But honestly, it was one of mostly sort of joy and unbelievable, like, there's Brian and D'Arcy James and here I am and we're about to perform the opening number on the Tony Awards. And, you know, I mean, I couldn't feel, you know, luckier or more blessed, but, you know, I'm sure you're anxious or whatever, but I mean, it's just all part of the thing. And then you just keep moving forward and do it and tell the story and look at Brian and, you know, just move forward.
Yep. Just do the job. Say the word.
Yeah.
Now we have to start to wrap up, but I do have one question because you mentioned it, you know, you kind of alluded to it before that, you know, you're ever changing and always, you know, excited for the next thing. What are some of your dream things to achieve in your career? Like what are some things that you're like dying to do?
Wow. Well, right now I'm dying to do Mrs. Doubtfire, the musical.
Oh, bubba.
You know, which will be back. And so that's the next thing on mine right now. Really? Yeah. You ask, my God, that's at the top of my list. Cause we are, we're so ready to go. And we were, you know, we'd done three previews and it was just the worst time in the world. Well, for all of us, but you know, to have it ripped from us right then, the most exciting time, everything is possible. No critics yet. Nothing.
Rachel York, Rachel York texted me the night before the shows shut down and was like, I have an extra ticket to Mrs. Doubtfire tonight. Do you want to come with me? And I was like, I think so. Cause I wasn't feeling well at this moment. And I was like, I really do want to go, but I was like, I don't, you know, like you said, Petri dish. So.
Yeah, no, please. So, you know, you know, I would love to, as far as like, you know, dream roles or whatever, things like that. At some point, I would love to get a shot at doing La Cage. You know, I think the show I love, and I've never done it. And I would actually love, my dream thing is to do a La Cage with another actor. I'm not sure who it would be. And we alternate roles nightly.
Oh.
Wouldn't that be fun? To do a La Cage where you could play both George and Albin? I think that would be so cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I would love to do that. But I would also, but if I have to choose one, of course I want to play Albin. So yeah, but no,
we have to think about who that's going to be.
Yeah. I've thought about it, but I haven't thought that specifically. Yeah.
I don't know why I'm thinking of Norm Lewis coming to mind. I don't know why.
Norm, dear Norm.
Like, I don't know why I just like that came to mind like immediately. I'm being tickled from that.
Right. As opposed to Brooke, where we would just spontaneously combust probably the two, you know, it would be too much. perhaps.
Oh my God, talking about, yes, you would catch on fire.
But that would be, that would be fun, right? A gay True West, if you will.
Oh, that's hysterical.
But you know.
I'm obsessed with that.
Yeah.
Well, right? When you do it, I'll be there front row.
All right. God willing. Kanahara, let's come back and do this. Oi.
Yes. I love that. I love that you're just giving me all the Yiddish. That makes me very happy.
I'm trying to get it all in before we go. Another good thing to come of this, you'll appreciate this.
Tell me.
Darling, Tantala.
Darling.
When we were up in quarantine upstate, darling, I made for the first time by myself, I made my mother's chicken soup, which again, very traditional, but I'd never fully made it myself. It was delicious. And her brisket with potatoes and carrots. Again, no great. Not that it's hard to make, but I'd never, really done it by myself. And it was, again, you talk about tasting like home and being home again, those two things. So
did you do you
go. Something good is coming?
One thing that, first of all, I love that you said home again, which reminds that there's a Frank Wildhorn connection there. That's like home again is a cut song from the Scarlet Pimpernel, I believe.
I know it well. I did all the readings of Pimpernel because I was doing Jekyll.
Did you really?
Yeah, I did a lot of readings. I didn't do Pimpernel because I was doing Jekyll. But Pimpernel. I did a lot of readings. Yeah.
I'm off book for Pimpernel. I'm obsessed with it.
I think it's a great score. Yeah. You wrote a really good score for Pimpernel.
You know what song I'm obsessed with the most, I think, is, and it's like, what are you talking about? Is Vive. It's track 4 on the Cast album.
Please, you don't have to tell me. I think it's a gorgeous melody. That's hilarious. You should say that. I love Vive.
It's beautiful. I think it's beautiful, and the orchestrations are amazing. Yeah. And I've always been obsessed with Scarlet Pimpernel, but when I was living in London, I was listening to Pimpernel a lot. So now when I think of Pimpernel, I think of my amazing times in London and going to France and stuff like that. Exactly. For your chicken soup, did you add schmaltz?
I mean, no, you skim most of the schmaltz,
Right.
Yeah. As far as that goes.
Don't you have to add it and then you take it out though?
Look, everybody's mother is, basically you put the whole chicken in there with the water and the carrots and the celery. And you let it just sit there for hours. And then you take stuff out and you got soup pretty much.
Look, if you were telling my boyfriend this, he would say, stop yelling at me. But I know that you're just passionate about it. Brad, Oscar, this is amazing. You're a mensch. You're perfect. Never change.
It's been a pleasure.
I can't wait to see you when this is done.
And you as well, my friend. You as well. Thank you so much. This was great.
Thank you. And thank you everyone to listening to Dear Multi Hyphenate. You can find me on Instagram at the Michael Kushner, or, this podcast has every time I have a fellow Jew on my episode, I start speaking with my Yiddish accent again. You can follow Dear Multi Hyphenate on Instagram and the Dressing Room Project to see all my backstage photography. And I'll see you every Thursday live at 7 PM Eastern Standard Time on the Broadway Podcast Network for My Broadway Memory. Be safe, be well, wear a mask, listen to Cast albums, keep theater alive. Love you all. Bye. This podcast is produced by the Broadway Podcast Network. Make sure to find me online via Instagram at The Michael Kushner or at The Dressing Room Project, or on Twitter at MKushnerPhoto. And visit me online via bpn.fm/dearmultihyphenate.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. and there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.